Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Aaron Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. Whether you're a seasoned operator or simply curious about the world of fintech, Talking Success is the perfect place to stay up to date on the latest developments in the industry. So sit back, grab a coffee, and let's start Talking Success.
So we've talked about sort of digital transformation. Mm-hmm. So how the banks, effectively, and the fintechs, because I think they've given the banks a, you know, a bit of a push in the right direction in terms of innovation and pushing the some of the boundaries. And we talk about how we're going to I'm not going to use financial inclusion. I know that's a big part of kind of the economy and what we're striving for. But for this part of the conversation, if we start looking at central bank digital currencies and we look here in South Africa, you've spoken just a moment ago about, you know, removing cash from society. And that's probably a pipe dream or certainly 10, 20, 30, 40 years in the future. Would something like a CBDC fast track that? Do you think there is a true business case for CBDC here in South Africa? I'm not talking on a global basis, but here in South Africa. What's your views?
Predicting the future is a dangerous game, right? Only Gene Roddenberry...
I usually rub my shiny head and then something happens. Try it, yeah.
So only Roddenberry and Bill Gates get it right? Star Trek, yeah. For some reason, Bill Gates seems to be able to predict the future. I think going with the thesis that, so on the one side, you've got, you know, there's the academic thesis, right? What can be done and what's the fastest way to adapt to change? And that is many, many, many different ways of tackling similar problems, right? So then you don't box yourself into one set of solutions. You open it up and you adapt based on that. Each thing has their path that they go along, and you hedge yourself against any one item locking you down. In practice, though, that becomes very, very difficult. So do I think CBDCs will be successful in South Africa? Depends what you mean by successful, right? Because they must grow from zero to something that takes on the scale of the national payment system and the financial movements in South Africa. So while a lot of technologies can be successful in small pockets, how do you create something that is at the scale of a national system, right? That's doing 120 million transactions or however many, right? And is actually resilient enough that you could add another million, another billion onto that. And it really doesn't fudge the system much, and that's what you have in terms of the existing systems. Now, the innovations and a lot of the stuff that's happening at the moment needs time to be able to build itself up to something that is at a national level, right? Is it available to everyone? Is it a standard? Is it simple? Is it protected by the law? What are my rights underneath the system? Our friends or our enemies, rather, the cyber criminals who track all of these things, are they ready and poised to exploit the system? So I think in short-term environments, we've been successful in a number of things. You know, the Saab was launched two blockchain projects, which were done in record-breaking time, right? And have great understanding and thinking around that. But again, for me, it comes to that transformation piece. We want to transform an entire country into a digital society, right? So it's not about, you know, point A or point B. It's about what happens in between. How do we take everyone along that journey and keep up our resilience levels, our protection levels, all of that at the high standard that we need to? Because those things are, for me, inexcusable. We can't have a situation where people's monies are taken out of their bank accounts, right? Or people you talked about the trust side of things. Trust is evolving. It's an interesting thing. But it would be a huge outcry to the government if money was taken away and just disappeared, right? Now, it happens, right? We've seen the crypto exchanges disappearing. We've seen that. But that's happened to very small pockets of people, right? And arguably people who have money and knew the risks when they went into it. If you open this up to something the size of a nation, what risks are we taking? So I do think CBDC will be great, right? I think It is something that the, you know, that the central banks have to do, because there's a challenge to fiat currency and modernization and all of that, right? It opens up huge opportunities for other things like multi-token environments or the ability to do cross-border trades in a different way. But it will take time. Will it be a success? Will Bitcoin be a success in the long term? And it depends on how long you define the long term as.
Absolutely. If we can deal with an elephant in the room, if we can for a second, indulge me, Kumaran, if you don't mind. So we're talking about digital transformation. We're talking about digital currencies. There's people like you and I who are massively passionate about this, can see the longer term and, you know, how digitizing economies can improve lives, can take people out of poverty. And then we bring it back to where we are today, right? So we're on the 27th of February. We're on stage 5 load shedding here in South Africa. There's talk of this load shedding going on for a lot longer, potentially, you know, God forbid, a blackout. And then there's people like us that are sitting there trying to convince people to go digital. You say, well, hang on a minute. If I can't charge my phone and I can't use an ATM and I can't go and, you know, go log on to online banking because I've got no electricity, then hang on, this is a scary thought. Cash is going to be king, and maybe cash is here for a lot longer because there is nervousness around actually what's going to happen here in South Africa with the power situation, which, if any of the listeners don't know, there is sort of rolling blackouts here in South Africa. It's set to continue for the time being. One thing I will say is, as a non-South African, the South Africans that I've met, which are many and plentiful, are probably the most resilient people I've ever met in my entire life. Just shrug things off like this. And, a few years ago, we had the water crisis in the Western Cape, and people just got on with their lives. And, you know, if that was in the UK, there would literally be riots every day. So, yeah, kudos to all my South African counterparts who are the most resilient people in the world. But going back to my point, Kumaran, are we at the point now where we can really start talking about digital, or is there, you know, legitimately a case for consumers to go, hang on a minute, I want to be able to access my money when I need to access my money?
Definitely there's a case. I mean, you know, and it's not a hope statement. It's a historically accurate statement. Rwanda was in a war-torn environment in the late 1990s. Germany was ripped apart after World War II. Singapore was, I think, the third poorest country in the world back in the day, in the 1950s and 60s. Right? We are not close to that kind of a scenario. Right? You know, South Africans are resilient. People are resilient. Right? People don't just lie down and die. They make a plan. Right? So something personal for me is my mom needed to put my three siblings through university and made a plan. She got up at 3 o'clock every morning. She had a particular skill in sewing. So she made stuffed toys and animals and she sold them. And she put three children through university, right? So that is there. The question is, how do you unlock it? And by the way, in doing that, my mom also came up with double entry accounting and an incredible cost accounting system and relationship model with the people that she was dealing with, right? So that stuff is there. Human intelligence is there. Human resilience is there. I think what is important is to pull that in and say, okay, how do we direct all that energy to something positive rather than something negative, right? We could fragment. We could choose to fragment. But I don't think South African culture is like that, right? I don't think it's the kind of environment where people say, okay, I'm ready to give up and give it a miss, right? Our history says that. Right? So, yes, we've got electricity problems and from what I read, water problems, as well. But we're not sitting in the bottom 10% of countries in the world. We're not in a war environment. We have able young minds. Children are going to school. Young people are building fintechs, right? So why are they building fintechs? Because there's hope and they have passion. So those are the important things. I mean, the fact that the electricity supply is giving us problems, that's a problem, right? But the Nigerians have had a problem with electricity supply all along, right? But people get on with it. And they, you know, if a measure of the success of an economy, of a developing economy in the world, is the amount of direct investment it draws, then the Nigerians have done exceptionally well, right? So I think we are, I'm not saying we're fine. I'm not saying we mustn't address the problems. But I don't, you know, sort of, I don't have a doom and gloom outlook for it. I suppose one way of looking at it is the same Swedish that I spoke of wrote an economic outlook on South Africa, which was incredibly positive. And I asked them, I said, why? Why is it so positive? And their answer was very interesting. It's that we don't look at things in short time frames. Right? Sweden has a relationship with South Africa going back to the 1960s, probably longer. And so for me, I get asked a lot by various companies, right? Is investment in South Africa a good thing? And then I have to think long and hard on how to answer this, because of course I want investment to come into South Africa, right? It's a duty as a South African, you know, to help President Ramaphosa generate his 100 billion. But I find that the honest answer is, if you are in it in South Africa for the long term, if you're going to build a sustainable business, and if you're going to do it for in perpetuity, you know, build a going concern, you want to set up a plant in South Africa, you want to grow South African skills, and you want to see this being something amazing, then South Africa is an amazing place. It's going to go through a couple of hiccups, but it's an amazing place to be in. If it's the Warren Buffett kind of thing that says, when there's blood in the streets, buy, 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 I said, well, I'd rather don't invest in South Africa then, right? Because that's just going to accelerate the bad things. I'd rather bring in the investment for something big.
And for the right reasons, I agree. We've not seen a slowdown in investment, certainly, again, in the world of fintech over the last
fintech's
6 months.
Fintech's done exceptionally well.
I mean, it's done incredibly. I mean, there was a big raise last week, Planet 42, with the sort of car leasing deal. Before that, there was Lula Lend, who raised $32 million. I mean, this is fantastic stuff for South Africa. And, you know, the people that are making these investments, you know, don't just go out on a whim and a prayer and pull $30 million out of their back pockets. You know, there's proper due diligence done, right? So, you know, this is really good. We've seen people like Network International come into the market, you know, with the acquisition of Payfast, and there's lots of, you know, positivity around. And I think, you know, from an infrastructure perspective, I'm not going to get into politics here at all. This is not the time nor the place. But I do think that will improve over time. You know, I've seen things over the last 10 years since I've been in South Africa, how things have evolved. And yeah, you know, you have peaks and you troughs, and some things go well and some things, okay, you know, need a bit more attention. But, you know, that is life. So great.
I think we will be fine as a country,
yeah.
Right? Because the spirit is there, the relationships are there, the history is there, all of that. The piece that we need to worry about is in the short term, right? Do we damage that resilience, or do we open up the door? And cyber resilience is a nice one to talk about, right? You've got to be on your toes with this stuff, because the guys that are doing it are not geographically located.
No, not at all.
To put it differently, cyber criminals are meritocracy, right? They exist on the dark web. They communicate with one another. They share information between competitors. They've formed an informal guerrilla network that is quite frightening, right? So that need for change needs to keep happening, and that need for change in turn fuels the need for innovation, and it means, you know, we've got to keep changing, right? We've got to keep going at it and keep going at it. I mean, you asked about you know, staying the same. I mean, imagine if everyone was still using checks in South Africa. So it can be done, right? And we will move to those other states. But it's a question of leadership, vision, not over-engineering things, and recognizing that, you know, we've got to set up the next generation to pick up stuff and say, okay, you're going to be a bit smarter than me because you've got ChatGPT and you know how to use it.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, probably a million other tools as well by the time this comes out. I'm blown away. I mean, I get a news feed every day of new AI tools. It's just frightening.
Incredible. It really is. It's incredible. It really blows me away. And that's exciting. That's very, very exciting. So, I mean, for me, I think I want to enthuse more young South Africans to not just get the qualification and exit or walk away to say, hey, right, there were a bunch of old guys in the 1990s who had a purpose, and this country is known to be able to do great things when it has a purpose, right? So start coming together with this new purpose, right? And it sounds very high in the sky, but when we investigate the countries that are moving ahead, it's fascinating that the common element between them is that all of the countries that are moving forward with digitalization have a clear sense of national purpose, right? China, India, the Scandinavian countries, right? And none of them have done it overnight. Not one of these countries. India's economic reformation started in the 1980s, right? China's first announced to the world it would be joining the global economies back in 1982 or something like that, right? The Scandinavian countries have been doing this since the late 1800s. So it takes time, but if you have that vision and purpose.
Sorry, everyone, that was load shedding. There you go. A quick move over the other camera.
You see, you've just demonstrated that, you know, these little hiccups don't actually change the conversation.
Absolutely, the show must go on. But you're right, and I think if there's one country that we can look at on the continent who probably fast track this faster than anyone else is Rwanda. I mean, in terms of the digital transformation there, it's amazing. You talk about sort of the national sort of pride and the national so the whole nation getting behind this and getting behind, you know, the leaders and then really driving this forward. I was blown away when I was in Kigali. Just the sheer scale of what they're doing, but it's not kind of glitz and glamour. And I think that's where, you know, you look at Singapore, UAE, Qatar, it's very glitz and glamour. And okay, fine, they've got, you know, billions and billions of dollars of natural gas and petrochemical. But if you look at someone like Rwanda, you know, what's built is functional. It's really, really inclusive, as in, you know, age, religion, gender. I mean, the gender, you know, parity there is unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. And you look at how quickly that's evolved since, obviously, you know, genocide really wasn't that long ago, if we put things into some context. It's amazing how a country can evolve and it can, you know, be a spearhead and be a catalyst for, you know, other nations looking and going, that's a really good mission, or that's a really good vision.
Darren, what I think is going to happen, I see, you know, the mathematics of all of this is these are big number problems, right? So you see countries like India and China emerging as leaders in the world. But that's because they've got experience in dealing with very, very big numbers. They know how to create operations of billions of people, right? Billions of data points. So all of the stuff we're talking about panders towards experience with large numbers, and the numbers just keep getting bigger and bigger. The IoT will come soon, and you know, it takes Kumaran from being an entity that generated 50 digital transactions a month to 50 million, 50 billion, you know. And now we ask ourselves, so how do we actually, you know, bring this together? And what we're seeing is it takes time, leadership is necessary, and adapt, right? I mean, people talk about sort of the Chinese model, but it's an incredibly adaptive model, right? They might have a very clear vision, right? Very clear idea of what it means to be the world leader in smart health and smart finance and innovation, right? And they might be targeting that, but the model itself adapts constantly, right? And it challenges things. It challenges things like funding models, the role of the state, democracy versus communism. All of these things get challenged. But what comes together at the bottom is this thing that says, how do you unlock those numbers? Because that's the potential of your economy. Right? So where I'm getting to with this is, I think the technology piece is going to become secondary to the trade deals and the economic movements, because I think regionalization and those forces are going to become a lot more important. And South Africa, to a great extent, is tied in not just geographically, but ideologically as well with the rest of Africa. Right? We are the leading, you know, our central bank is highly respected in Africa. Right? We're the leading environment. We've led in a lot of things. But what it needs now is we need to be able to unlock. We talked about the SMME market. Yeah. Right? The SMME market is a decentralization effect. Right? It's where it's no longer the firm, but you also have the market. It's trading. You know, it takes care of geographic borders. It takes care of over-centralization. And Africa was uniquely positioned for this, because it's such a geographically large space with people removed from one another. Technology, the smartphone just landed so well, right? And it's enabled so much to happen that in the retail markets, you just see this clamor towards decentralization, being able to put power and economic activity in the hands of people, right? And I think that will unlock. Now, if we're going to be successful as South Africa, part of our vision must be not just unlocking the potential of 60.8 million people, but being part of the potential of 1.3 billion people. That competes with a China, with an India, you know, with the United States, with the European Union, because I think that's where the movements can happen. And things like payments. You know, the Indians are, from my understanding, is they're not targeting payments as an end state. It's not a silo to look at payments, right? Their system is much, much bigger than that. Right? Their UPI system, the Aadhaar digital identity, all of that is unlocking a market of a few hundred million participants. Right? So you think of all those software developers and young people from that young population pyramid entering the market with digital identities and the capability to use ChatGPT, et cetera, right? And that becomes a powerful force. So we've got to do the same. It's a mathematics problem. Things are increasing exponentially. The best way to deal with it is to distribute the problem as much as possible so that you don't centralize diminishing returns and things like this. So to the beginning of this, where do banks and fintechs come in? Everyone must do the right thing and collaborate and move things forward, right? I'm not going to predict whether a crypto or a CBDC or a, you know, some newfangled technology that comes out next week is going to be the winner. But if there is that collaboration, then the market becomes more resilient and it starts turning over ideas faster and it starts bringing new participants in. And most importantly, it hands something over to the next generation, right? My daughter's 11. She's smarter than I am by far already. By the time she's 18, she'll be using tools I can't even dream about now, right? But I still have a role to play. I can teach her the value system. I can teach her, you know, what is important for society and to be a good person and bring that in to what we talk about and call our society and our business. And I think that's important. So we are inextricably linked into Africa. We have to not even be a recipient of it. We should be promoting trade movements in Africa, right? And payments needs to move very quickly to being like the water in the tap. You don't know how many scientists are involved in giving you the water in the tap. All you want to know is when you open the tap, the water comes out of the tap.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.